Hello, I'm Newell Nussbaumer with Buffalo Rising. I'm here today with Sumit Majumdar, who is the president and CEO of Buffalo Biodiesel. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So for people who aren't familiar with biodiesel, your company collects used cooking oil for recycling into biodiesel, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So where are you originally from?
I'm from Canada.
You're from Canada. And did this company bring you to Buffalo? Did this concept bring you to Buffalo?
No.
Okay. What brought you to Buffalo?
Family.
Family brought you to Buffalo. And what did you do before the biodiesel business?
I was in IT, and then prior to that, I went to medical school.
Okay. And how and why did you start the company?
I was an environmentalist, a little bit of a tree hugger. I used to make biodiesel as part of a co-op. So when I came to the United States, I wanted to make biodiesel for my TDI. I had a Volkswagen turbo diesel.
No way.
And
that's really cool.
And what ended up happening was the rules in the U.S. required permitting.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I set up the permitting so I wouldn't make it illegally.
You're kidding.
No.
That's how this was born.
Yes. It was never part of the program. Just to set up a co-op so I can make bio.
And how, so then all of a sudden that was a light bulb moment when you decided that this is something that I really just am passionately going to do for a living?
Actually it was weird. It was, serendipitous. The permitting process was very lengthy, at least on the federal level. And then, what ended up happening was after we got the permitting, I didn't realize what we had accomplished. And we were solicited by, other companies trying to enter in the space. So then it became a viable, option. So
that's incredible.
Yeah.
So at that point, had there been any other sort of collection of the cooking oil for biodiesel in Buffalo? I mean, were you pretty much like the forefather of this movement in Buffalo?
The collection of used cooking oil was from just one major competitor, and it would go into animal feed at the time. And, I was really passionate about carbon reduction, so I decided, to give it a go. And so I believe I'm the first one. I'm not aware of anybody else. But there are a few farmers that I met throughout the years that actually make their own biodiesel, so they would be collectors too.
Yeah. As far as the actual movement in the United States, where was Buffalo at that time?
For biodiesel production, mm-hmm. Probably right at the forefront.
You think, really?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. So you were at the forefront then of the movement.
Weirdly. Yes. Not intentionally.
Yeah, not intentionally. So do people look at you as somebody who was really like a leader in this this green economy?
I guess so. I don't like to talk about, what I do or what I've accomplished, mm-hmm. but I'm a regular contributor to Bloomberg, capital markets and green markets, the analyst and writer for them, at least on a personal level, as has said and very graciously said, and I'm almost ashamed to admit that I'm considered to be the industry expert for used cooking oil collection processing in the biofuel markets. That would be nationally, but don't take, I think he's lying or drunk or both. it's weird.
Yeah.
20 years of it, I guess.
Yeah. 20 years. Yeah. We're going to get to that a little bit later, but, sure. That's really exciting. 20 years, flies by, huh?
Sure.
where is your headquarters?
Our headquarters are now officially downtown Buffalo, 17 Court Street.
This is surprising to me. I just learned this. So you just bought a building.
In 23, yes.
Oh, in 23, okay. Before that, where was your headquarters?
So our headquarters prior to that was in Kenmore, part of expansion, and then prior to that was at our plant in Tonawanda on Sawyer. So 20 years ago was Tonawanda, expanded out with additional locations in Kenmore. We ran out of space, and we had to make a decision, either move out of state or double down, and we said, we're going downtown.
Fantastic.
Double down in downtown.
Yeah. What was the, how did you find this building?
That's beautiful. Yeah. it's too big and it's too nice. And that's the best thing about Buffalo. It's got such great architecture. This is actually on the walking tour. Need a lot of work. Still needs a lot of
work. Does it need a lot of work?
It still does.
Okay. What was the occupancy of that building?
There was, four of the floors were occupied by a benefits company and one of the sellers, and the other four were unoccupied at the time.
Okay.
And now we occupy it completely.
Completely?
Yes.
And how many floors is it?
With the basement, 8 floors.
8 floors.
Yeah. Just over 60,000 square feet.
That's incredible. Yeah. Well, that says something about Buffalo Biodiesel right there.
I'm not sure what, but yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, how many employees do you have?
Right now, about 150.
Okay. And are those employees all, like, where are all those employees?
So we're now operating in 15 states. So the employees are spread around. About 70 or so are at the main plant and the repair shop. So we have a mechanic shop there. And about 40 or so are downtown.
And okay.
The rest are spread around.
All right. that's fascinating. I was not aware about this this Court Street. Now, just as an aside, I hear that you might be opening a speakeasy at some point in this building.
Probably in about 30 years, but yeah. we do have a design for a beautiful speakeasy to restore the primary first floor, which is gorgeous, huge ceilings, to get it done, and eventually it's going to get done.
And you've got some pretty cool stuff to put in that speakeasy?
I hope so, and we have a Steinway piano, 9.5 concert.
Do you play?
No, I don't. I watch.
You watch, all right. So you'll have a pianist come in to play. That sounds pretty fascinating. And you've got some pool tables and other things just to have some fun, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Well, you got that many employees, you got to keep them happy, right?
Yeah, and there's lots of restaurant owners that we like. And
for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what you deal with. You deal with restaurant owners.
That's right.
How many restaurants?
Now about 28,000. Believe it or not, 28,000.
28,000?
Yeah.
That's amazing. How many in Buffalo or in Western New York? Do you have that number?
I don't, but I'm going to say about a couple thousand.
Okay.
Maybe 50% of market share, maybe a little bit more.
All right. How big is the biodiesel industry in the U.S.?
Today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed to say it's much smaller today than it was before. So a lot of the biodiesel locations and businesses have gone out in the last 6 months to a year. The ones that are left are big petro-owned biodiesel enterprises that are what we call as Gen 2 or SAF producers. There's a few small biodiesel producers. Co-ops are still around, but there's not much left.
Is that because of buyouts?
No, it's market changes.
Just market changes?
And the less of a focus on green.
Mm-hmm.
The industry lost a subsidy that was keeping it propped up. The Gen 1 biofuel businesses pretty much went out.
Wow. Are you considered one of the bigger companies these days?
Weirdly, very strangely, not on purpose, at 28,000, we're definitely number 6 in the country. And I think we might be number 5, in terms of, used cooking oil collection.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse.
Well, 20 years you've been doing this, right? So, that sounds like a pretty amazing achievement. So let's divert here a little bit. I want to talk about something that I find fascinating, even though it's really just an incredibly not good for your industry. But can we talk about the widespread theft of used cooking oil?
it's pretty bad. Never want to get political on it.
Right.
So what's happened is... And I brought you actually a list. We have a newsletter that we sent to law enforcement. It's a pretty substantial list, and I've kind of slowed down a little bit on the distributions of the list. But you can see how big it is. That's the newsletter, double-sided, double-paged. And what's happened is that the industry is being plagued with these thefts, and these thefts are primarily used for money laundering. So a lot of organized criminal gangs are involved. Most of the arrests that we have criminal gang members. The one where we hit the front page of the Buffalo News had a member that actually was a hitman. And he was part of a Dominican gang, and he had an extradition warrant, which is why we're on the front page.
Yeah.
But he had an extradition warrant for a murder that he had done in Spain. So he was extradited. Obviously the extreme. We've had some interesting ones. We had one guy who chemically removed his fingerprints. And we've had a lot of people associated with criminal gangs. We've had really recently had a federal prosecution locally in Rochester that had to do with the Chinese gang. There's a lot, and what it really is isn't about the used cooking oil or making biodiesel. It's the lack of controls for traceability, because EPA obviously has been stripped of enforcement. It's a segue for people to launder money from human trafficking and drugs. That's really what it comes down to.
That's incredible. That is really unbelievable, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it's our number one problem. It's
So how do you prevent it from happening? Because I've heard that you've really got to be proactive.
Oddly enough, as I stumble through the program, we have great law enforcement agents and connections. You educate law enforcement to explain to them, you know, what is actually going on. The used cooking oil theft is funding. Educate prosecutors. You know, we have John Flynn involved educating district attorneys at the county levels. We have John Fighter, who was the former SAC, which is a special agent in charge for New York City. He, I guess, was the head of the largest federal law enforcement agency in the country. And he's been liaisoning with state agencies and federal agencies. In addition, education of our restaurants. Also, making sure that they understand that they need to be safe, not confront these folks, and to call law enforcement. We've had, unfortunately, a few incidences. So we want to try to educate them. Every time we have a break-in, we send out a letter. We came up with some technology.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, and that technology is able to now detect when those drops occur at the moment that they occur. So before, we'd have to deal with catching folks red-handed, which is hard to do. You know, a lot of it happens in the middle of the night, between 11 o'clock at night and 5 in the morning. So now we have the radar drops, so we can actually provide that to law enforcement, and then they can canvas, get video, and deal with the crooks. Yeah.
Good for you.
Sure.
So Buffalo Biodiesel, it's a very green business. Like, what did they do with cooking oil before Buffalo Biodiesel? Did they just, like, throw it down the drains, like, or just nobody knew what happened to it?
Well, the garbage business is a dirty business.
Mm-hmm.
Our competitors would typically control territories, just like they would in regular garbage. And then what they would do is I'd call it double dipping. So they would charge a large rate from the restaurant to dispose of their grease. And then what they would do is then convert that at that time when we first started into animal feed. So if you go to Europe, used cooking oil is banned in most countries for use in animal feed. But because of lobbying, it's still available for animal feed in the United States.
Wow.
And so what most of the restaurants were doing were just dealing with the only game in town, the only price in town, to make the most amount of profit, which is animal feed. And
then,
of course, that goes into the animal feed and onto your table and into your tummy.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
All right. That's another conversation for another day, I guess.
Yeah.
Are you the only company in Buffalo the only Buffalo company doing this?
I believe so. At least of any size.
Of any size. Okay. How wide is your collection footprint?
It's 15 states, so we run from New Hampshire to Michigan. We're as far south as Maryland.
Okay. All right. And who do you sell the biodiesel to once it's refined?
So that's important. We don't actually refine biodiesel at our facility. Everything is now Gen 2, which is why we're super green. We don't have any emissions of any kind. And most of our material goes to a company that is owned by a whole bunch of tech guys.
really?
Yeah, Bezos, Zuckerberg, Dell, and Gates. You know, they're still, you know, promoting the green theme.
Right. So,
thank goodness for them, because our normal buyer that we've been dealing with since 07, unfortunately, is in receivership.
So, oh, is that right?
Sad to see him go. It was a good run for 18 years.
18 years?
Yeah.
Oh, that is too bad.
It was.
All right. Now, we talked about this being a competitive business, you know, your growth. You're obviously doing some amazing things right now. Lots of positive stuff. But you were recently in the news. What's the story with these mixed messages that are in the news these days with the DEC, the permitting issues? As I said, there are a lot of conflicting stories out there. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening?
Sure.
The message?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So the DEC, first of all, we started in 2005, mm-hmm. so right at the pioneering time or age. When I started, and again, I immigrated to the country. When I started, I called the IRS, I called the EPA, I called the state, and I called the DEC. So what had happened is DEC said this was not regulated. And we didn't need a license. There's no permit. The state said in order to transport biofuels, I needed 420, which I applied for. The EPA defers to the state, and at that time it wasn't regulated. And the IRS said I needed a 637, which I applied for, which is why it took about a year and a half. And I remember the excise tax officer that granted my license, Phyllis Spears.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So she was very nice enough to grant it to us, but also deny a retail license, so we could only wholesale manufacture. DEC regulations, real simple. The applicant or the company or the individual is required by law to know what the law is. They're not required to notify. And what I want to make sure that everybody understands, everybody at the Buffalo office of the DEC is really professional. There's nothing personal. But they also weren't obligated to notify us of the rule change. So for 13 years, the rule didn't change. And I didn't think to check to see if there's a new regulation coming into, of course, a green industry. And we're not a polluter. They've been to our site plenty of times. And what ended up happening was after about 2.5 years of the new regulatory change, they notified us that we needed to register under the new regulations. And I was like, hey, no problem. Let's go. And I looked at the regulations and it's pretty big. So what I did was, we asked for the transition period, which again is part of the rule. And I hired a environmental engineer. From UFT. I had a master's in environmental engineering from UFT, a deal, and I had him sit down and start writing this application. About 8 months later, 1,200 hours later, he submitted the application in 2020. So it took him a few months to do it. And again, it's tough, and we appreciate everything that the DEC's done for us. And they haven't done us any favors from that standpoint. They've been just professional. They found it to be deficient. And Adil was only supposed to hear temporarily before he moved on. And he, of course, took a job with the EPA. So here you have an engineer with a master's in environmental engineering, not civil or chemical, from one of the best universities in the world for environmental engineering, that took a job at the EPA, that was unable to complete the application to the satisfaction of the DEC. And so what we did was we were like, hey, we have to comply. We want to make sure we're doing everything. Again, it's not a processing issue. This is a permitting issue for registration. So what we did is we asked them, hey, do you know who can do this? Because again, an engineer has to sign off. They have to be a PEng, and then they have to be an expert enough to know what the requirements are. And they would not recommend anybody because they're not allowed to. Mm-hmm. But what they did provide us with a list of people that have been associated with other applications, not related to our industry. Again, it's just newly regulated. So the so I picked a local firm, Burn. And what ended up happening was they got on it. They threw out a deals, I want to say 400 or 500 page application. And what ended up happening was they came up with about a 100 pager draft in 2021. We're in the middle of COVID. So there was contact in between with the DEC regarding it, but we just retained them, paid them in upfront to work with the DEC to make sure that we are complying, mm-hmm. because we obviously couldn't do it on our own, even with a master's in environmental engineering.
That's incredible.
And for 4 years, we didn't hear anything. And so we just assumed that everything was between the engineering firm and the DEC. And what ended up happening, of course, is there was a complaint regarding our application when the regulations changed again. So the regulations changed 3 times in this period. And there was a complaint. And we addressed the complaint in 24. And, of course, they're saying, hey, you know, where's the permitting? The application's not moving forward. And in between there was a sound study that was done in 22. There was some touch to it, and that was done by the engineering firm. And we had met with, the folks that made the complaint, Clean Air Coalition, explained what our business was. And what the bigger problem is that, you know, the industry is just not understood. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't a refinery. We're not a polluter. We're not a diesel manufacturer. And these guys are really cool cats. They're all about the environment. They're very active, grassroots. And they're like, hey, you know, thanks for the education. This is what it is. And we notified the DEC. It was resolved. And then what happens, DEC wanted to move this application along, mm-hmm. because, again, it's been hanging out there for a minute. And we contacted the engineering firm to have them move. And they said, you know, there's only 3 outstanding items. What ended up happening was we missed an email. We missed an email. We didn't miss a letter, but we missed an email that was sent on the 20th of December. So 4 days before Christmas Eve, we missed it. That's our bad. Then we had a site visit.
What was this email?
That we need to move along with this, this permitting.
Okay.
Or you're out.
Yeah.
And,
that's a pretty important email to miss, I guess.
I would think so. Yeah. So, I mean, our bad, and it's only one point of contact, and
right.
it's no one's fault. It's,
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
our fault.
Right.
And so then they had a site visit, and we talked about it. We told them, you know, we'd already reached out to the engineering firm. And then they did a follow-up with a complaint, which we did, and then attached to that complaint follow-up was the push for the permitting. And so then what, of course, happened is they have a standard, you know, cease letter that they sent out, and this one received by certified mail. So at that point, we made the phone call right away, told them, you know, we didn't know, we'd like to fix this. They gave us an extension on the spot, and then we contacted our engineering firm, and this is where it gets a little bit more messed up. The engineering firm says there's 3 outstanding items. The DEC now says there's 19 outstanding items, and so we asked the engineering firm to make sure that they contact the DEC to find out what we need to do in order for us to get this thing completed before the deadline. And then they responded back, you know, based on obviously new regulations, that the demand was so onerous, it requires hundreds of hours of engineering work, and they don't have the resources to handle it. We, of course, had asked for a meeting with the DEC, which they're gracious enough to give us. And then what we did was we looked around for the number one 360 guy out there for solid waste, because, again, this is very confusing, very complicated stuff that even a master's in environmental engineering couldn't do. But again, our responsibility, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And we went and found the number one guy. And he was part of that meeting. And after that meeting, he had identified what all the proper pathways are, how to stay lawful, how to get it done. And then we engaged with him. And then what we did was he's fighting cancer and he wants to help because he's agreeing to.
He's a greenie, nice.
He's a greenie. He might drink chartreuse, I hope, but not really sure. So he came in and he brought in a PNG, he flew him in to go through the plant. And within 2 hours, he said, we can do this. We can get you up to date. I can do it. We can get all of your facility to comply. And then he said, there's three things that I need. And one first thing was, you're not going to like this, but it's going to cost over $1 million to do it. And I said, I'm good with that. And two, he said, I don't break any rules. So you're going to have to follow everything I say or the deal's off. And I can make sure that you're in full compliance, at least to this regulation, because he understands it. And I said, you got it. And he said, the third thing is you need community involvement. You need to make sure that the complainant is cool and everything's good. And that was the hard one.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we reached out to, the folks at
Clean Air.
And sorry, I get nervous sometimes. But I met with them. And mm-hmm. because we're community, activists, we made it real easy. We said, look, if we're not welcome, just let us know. We won't give you a hard time. We'll leave.
But leave in what capacity?
I mean, we'll go out of state.
Go out of state.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we don't, the community really should be the ones directing who's in the neighborhood.
So for sure.
Even if we're there for 20 years, mm-hmm. if they want us out, they want us out.
Right.
So we explained our agenda. We said, hey, look, this is the type of employer we are. We are very inclusive. A lot of people refer to us as the United Nations of Buffalo. We are very green. We have no emissions of any kind. And we have the same synergies. So we want community involvement. So they said, no, we want you to stay and we'll even help you.
Mm.
So at that point, that's three thumbs up and we're ready to go. So we submitted our application along with the request. We hope the DEC accepts they have a perfect segue to getting it done with community involvement. And I think we're good.
Is there a timeline on this?
That I don't know, but currently we're operating under the extension, and we're waiting for from the DEC. I'm hoping with positive news. They did mention, of course, that they're very pleased that this consultant is on board. They have direct experience.
Great. Yeah. All right.
So I'm hopeful. I'm thinking it's going to be good.
So basically, holding pattern at this point.
It's a holding pattern. Again, it was submitted. Yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah, it's pretty
incredible.
Quick. It's pretty quick, so all done within about a week.
All right.
And there's a lot of hoops to jump through, a lot of plant upgrades, a lot of engineering work, but there's a pathway to get it all done, and I don't see any hiccups. We just need the time to do it, and it's going to get done.
Yeah. And the last question here, it's not even a question, it's more of a congratulations, but you recently celebrated a milestone anniversary.
Yeah, 20 years.
20 years. So I heard you had a party.
We did. We had a party at the Curtis, one of our customers, some rollover at the Hyatt, about 150 guys. We even got a fireworks permit, did that, and it was a great day.
Is that right?
It was a great day, and it was nice to see the support from the city. It's one of the reasons why we exist.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, if Buffalo didn't give us a chance, we wouldn't be in biz.
That's right, and you're still in growth mode, right?
We are.
Yeah,
we are.
Like, where do you want to be in 5 years?
Well, one of the big turn-ons that I have is we branded Buffalo Biodiesel, so we don't change the name. So right now we're in Michigan, and I get a little call here and there. Hey, I saw one of your trucks on the road in Detroit, or I get a call in Indiana, or I get a call in New Jersey. The goal is to go as far south. There's a gap now, at least in the biofuels industry. We teamed up with Don Jones, and he's agreed to do a funding with us. We actually signed an agreement with him back in April to get several $100 million of funding. We put in an offer for one of the largest biodiesel plants that shut down. We'd like to get it back up and running.
Is that right?
Yeah, we did. We put in an 8-digit offer for that. And what we're hoping in the next few years is to have, you know, about 300 people downtown, to have an anaerobic digester in our facility, obviously after we get all of the proper permitting.
Right.
And I'm expecting that we'll probably create around 500 to 600 more jobs. That's really what the goal is. So even with this, even with this plant expansion too, for this new regulation, what will happen is we're going to add about 26 positions in Tonawanda.
Unbelievable. What an exciting Buffalo story this is. And I'm sorry to hear that you've gone through some headaches, but it sounds like you're getting close to the end of the tunnel here, and hopefully from there it's all smooth sailing.
Yeah, no, you know, we have a disruptive sales model. You know, we are taking money from folks that are making a lot, giving it back to the restaurants. You know, when we first started, again, they were all being charged for disposal. And ironically, some of the new territories, I've just seen, you know, bills. I got a bill right here of $350 for a pickup on grease, and then they sell it for another $300. And we can move that money back to the restaurants. And right. More importantly, that grease, we need it. We need that grease. So we can reduce the carbon. 19.2. Actually, it's funny. Somebody mentioned, you know, are you a billionaire? And you know what I said? I said, yes. And I am a billionaire from carbon reduction. We've actually reduced over 1 billion pounds of CO2 out of the year. And this year, we're going to do 150 million pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. So from carbon reduction.
Yeah.
That's
right. And liquid, not solid, right?
That's right. Liquid, not solid. Liquid, not solid.
Well, Summit, it was such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming on this podcast. And congratulations on everything. And as I said, smooth sailing moving forward.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
All right. You got it.